This is episode number 9 of the WordPress Authority Show with 4-star authority site owner Brian Clark of copyblogger.com. Today's show is WordPress Authority Business Builder, where we discuss the basic building blocks used by WordPress Authority website owners. For more information on the show formats and for other shows in this season and series, make sure to check out wpauthorities.com/shows. Well, what is an authority site?
So when I think of an authority website,
I think of the place that people go when they want to learn from the best. I think of where the credibility lies.
Hey, I hope you're having a great day wherever you happen to be in the world today. Thanks so much for spending some quality time with me. I'm Trevor Turnbull, your host of the WordPress Authority Show, where we cut through the noise and dial into the signal each and every day, featuring a WordPress Authority site owner. And today, that is none other than Brian Clark of copyblogger.com. Now, Brian shared some great information during this podcast interview, and here's just some of the things that you're going to learn during this one. First of all, he talked about how teaching with online education courses helped him set up all his other business ventures. Brian also shared how authority is one of the 6 primary influencers of human beings and what he actually means by this. He also talked to us about how cornerstone content is the key to being an authority online and building an authority website online. All right, so let's get into the show right after this message. Are you a WordPress Authority subscriber? Don't miss your shot to claim your authority. Subscribe to our email list at wpauthorities.com. Question for you. What's your problem? Seriously though, we're here to find solutions to your biggest problems in your own WordPress Authority website business. How would you like a coach to review your site, to recommend solutions, and even implement them for you on the spot? Every week on the WordPress Authority Show, a lucky winner will get a free report, action guide, and a 15-minute coaching session delivered via Google Hangout or Skype. To qualify, simply go to iTunes, find the WordPress Authority Show, subscribe to the podcast, leave a review, hopefully a 5-star review, and then most importantly, post your biggest problem at wpauthorities.com/coaching. And now it's time for the WordPress Authority Show, where we are serious, but don't call us Shirley. So what's up, everyone? I'm Trevor Turnbull, and welcome to the WordPress Authorities podcast, where we show you how to model the masters of WordPress publishing so that you can create, grow, and monetize your own authority website. And today on the show, we are talking with none other than Brian Clark from copyblogger.com, amongst other websites as well. Brian, thank you very much for joining us on the show today.
Thanks for having me, Trevor. I appreciate it.
Yeah, it's our pleasure. And as I mentioned to you, before we hit the record button here, we've been obviously following you and your ventures and have gotten involved in different products that you've created, used your products. So like I say, it's a pleasure to talk to you here today. I know our audience is going to enjoy hearing what you have to say too about a few topics that we're going to ask you about. So let me get right into it. This kind of sets the tone for the interview so that our audience can get a sense of whether you're a techie guy or a non-techie guy. And that is, would you consider yourself a technophobe or a technophile? Meaning, do you love technology? Is it a part of your daily life? Do you hate it? Or is it a little bit of a love-hate relationship?
So this is a great question, and I'm a weird case because I've been publishing online for 16 years now. And back in the late 90s, you know, in the dark ages, it was me there with Dreamweaver and FrontPage trying to create sites on my own. Not a good designer, but I know great design when I see it. So, you know, I was very hands-on in those days because what are you going to do? Mm-hmm. You know, I would effectively hire a designer to give me an HTML template that I would manually upload and publish individual pages with my writing, which is what I can actually do. Yeah. So even though I have that experience that a lot of people never had to deal with because we do have things like WordPress since 2005, I did that, but that doesn't mean I can do really anything anymore. Yeah. And so when I started Copyblogger in 2006, it was to share the content creation side of things and actually being able to build businesses with content. But I still needed help with design and all that. But I might, you know, I was on WordPress as soon as it, you know, I was like, this is so much easier. And yet for someone like me, even today, WordPress, you could use some help, I think, for the business person and for people like us. And that's how we got into the WordPress premium market in 2008, basically adding on for the people like me. It's basically, if I can't do something and we can create something to fix that, it's probably going to work for a lot of other people too.
Absolutely. And let's maybe dive into your story a little bit, just how Copyblogger became. And now, of course, there's numerous businesses and multiple employees and everything. So maybe you can step everybody back and just let them know how you got into this space and the evolution of your business.
Yeah. So I'm actually a former attorney, and I always ask people for credit because there's one less attorney in the world. Didn't enjoy it. Yeah, exactly. Everyone says that. I don't know why. So 1998, I kind of quit my really great law firm job because I was just miserable and had been looking at the internet going, there's got to be a way, you know, to make a living doing this. Started out, took me a couple of years to really figure out what I was doing. Back in those days, we didn't have all the how-to blogs and the conferences and all that. You really had to watch what other people were doing, figure out where they were screwing up and where they were doing well, and only do the good stuff. Mm. But mainly it was just you do stuff and you figure out what works. So once I started figuring things out, I built a boutique law firm just to pay the bills was my really first project because I was running out of money. Then I got serious and started two real estate brokerages that were nothing but websites. So it was like the first virtual brokerage at the time. That wasn't a thing. They're very common now. And so I did that from 2002 to 2005. I got out of that business because it was kind of killing me from a work standpoint. Did well, but worked really, really, really hard. And as we talked about offline, sometimes you got to change models so you don't kill yourself. No doubt. And then the idea for Copyblogger came out of that, which was I had been using content to build businesses, to sell products and services. And everyone else in blogging at the time was, how do I make any money with advertising? And my answer was, it's really, really hard to do that. You just need massive amounts of traffic. But you need a small amount of traffic and a small audience to sell something like real estate services or what have you, or even software as it came to be. So started off with that, built the audience from there because there were a lot of people that were interested in that topic. Really didn't have a product for the first year and a half. I just was really concentrating on building trust and building the audience up. And then we released our first product, which was a online education course. And then in 2008, that's when we got into the WordPress space. Even though I'd been using WordPress, you know, it's with open source, you always wonder, is it going to be like Red Hat and Linux? Is it going to create the business sector? And WordPress did, because it became and remains the most popular CMS on the internet.
Yeah.
So we were really following the lead of this guy named Brian Gardner, who was the first person to sell at the time themes. Because what you were really doing, and it's always this case with open source, you're selling support. You need someone to be there when you have a problem when it comes to software. So started there. We created the first design framework for WordPress. We started adding other products afterwards. In 2010, I had launched several different companies off of Copyblogger, and I left one company I was involved with in the WordPress space, merged all the other companies together with Brian Gardner Studio Press. So we weren't involved with Brian at the very beginning, but thankfully, we caught up with him as soon as we could. And that's really been the story of Copyblogger Media from 2010 to now. And we've just been building and building each year toward the kind of vision that we've been working on, which I guess we'll probably talk about later.
Yeah, for sure. And you touched on this briefly, but why WordPress ultimately? Did you look at other platforms, other content management systems when you first started going down this path? Did you always know it was going to be WordPress? What influenced you to head that direction?
That's interesting. And when, again, you look at my past of doing everything the hard way.
It's the best way to learn sometimes, right?
Exactly. And I had all these legacy websites in 2005 that had been built and were ranking well in search engines. You just, at least at that time, you just didn't change. So it was really when I got away from those businesses that I was able to just say, okay, starting from scratch, what am I going to do? And at that time, it was WordPress, you know, and I can't even tell you if I looked at anything else because WordPress was the thing in the space. And it was really new, like brand new at that point. But it's one of those things where Matt did a fantastic job of, you know, forking the earlier platform that WordPress evolved from. And it just caught on because for people who had enough technical savvy, WordPress was a gift. Mm-hmm. It was like, wow, I really can do more with less mucking around with technology and just really focus on creating good stuff to share with people.
Yeah, yeah. And it has come a long ways, obviously, in a short time period, too. I know even as recent as probably five, 6 years ago, you know, plugins to add advanced functionality and make things easier were easier said than done, you know?
Oh yeah. I mean, it started slowly and then it just took off. And of course the whole WordPress community as a whole, you know, you've got obviously free and open source, you've got free for marketing purposes, you've got paid because you want to make sure the company is there to support you into the future. Mm-hmm. So it's one big thing of choices, which I think is fantastic.
Yeah.
And I think you'll see that continue to evolve with more choice, more functionality, more power.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a powerful community right now. That's for sure. Now, the other side of what we talk about on our podcast here is the authority side. So when I say, you know, obviously you are an authority in your niche and you guys have a product that's actually called Authority, which we'll talk about here a little bit later too. But when I say that term authority, what do you deem as an authority website? What comes to mind for you?
Well, yeah, that's a very central concept going back to the very beginning. You know, authority itself is one of the six primary influencers of human beings. You know, it literally means the power to command or influence thought or action or opinion. I mean, pretty powerful stuff. But authority also means a citation, you know, in the content sense to something that you point to or link to as a reference to what you're trying to support in whatever argument or blog post or whatever you're trying to say. So, you know, and then of course, Google is built around the concept of authority. So for us, authority has always been this is what you're trying to do. You're trying to become an authority as a person, which is an offline concept, obviously. Yeah. Trying to build an authority website, which is Google, essentially, and people taking that offline concept of authority and applying it online. Mm-hmm. You know, and then going forward, that's your platform for conducting business. So when last May, when we launched our new training program, calling it Authority was kind of a no-brainer. It's almost like people said, what took you so long?
Yeah. Well, in the sense of, you know, what your core competency for your business is in content marketing, obviously content is the king when it comes to building authority, right? Whether it be...
Well, right. And authority is the goal of content creation. I think when we try to lay out that you need a strategy and here's where you're trying to get, authority is this pivotal point in the fulcrum, if you will, of what you're doing with content marketing, with the end goal being, you know, building the business you're aiming for right here and then building something even bigger than that, because it tends to accelerate when you have that going for you.
For sure. And you mentioned Google authorship or Google authority, right? I know I've read a lot of articles on your guys' blog about this topic, and there's some great resources there. But there's still a little bit of Wild West with all of this. What's your understanding as to authorship and how important it is to the ranking aspect of websites and really helping them bump up in the organic search results?
Right. So authorship is the new frontier, and this thing that we call, Google doesn't call it author rank, but they have an algorithm that alludes to something that we are referring to as author rank, where the creator of the content is factored into the algorithm, just like offline. It makes so much sense if you think about the fact that from PageRank to site authority to authorship and so-called author rank, all Google's trying to do is make the search engine function like the offline world did, where the leading expert on X, Y, or Z is the thing that comes up. But it's not that you claim that you're the expert. Right. It's that everyone else has said, no, this is the expert, right? Yeah, and this is the function of social media within the context of authority, because that's how information spreads online. And so every time people are sharing your content, and then, you know, hopefully that grows into from Brian's article to Brian or Brian's company, you know. That's kind of how it all works together. And that social component of distribution is why Google created Google Plus. Not only it's not necessarily to fight Facebook. It's a topical network as opposed to who you went to high school with or whatever. So it's really centered around content, and that's how Google gets real data that's harder to manipulate. Right. I didn't say impossible, but harder. You know, that's Google's main goal, which is, you know, to make it more difficult to game anything when it comes to SEO.
Right. So the true authorities are the ones that rise to the top and become the true voice.
That's the idea, but never put it past. I've got some very creative friends out there who are now calling themselves content marketers because, you know, Google with Panda and Penguin and Hummingbird really, you know, bringing all those things to be the algorithm. It really is hard. You just got to do the work, you know?
Yeah. So where would you say, you know, and I know you have numerous properties, but let's talk about Copyblogger in particular. Where would you say Copyblogger ranks in the level of authority? You know, would you say it is the go-to authority in content marketing? I guess we'll just leave it at that. Where do you think you rank and your site's rank as it relates to the topic of authority?
Well, we have this concept of cornerstone content, and those are the things your site talks about, and therefore that you would be considered, or you or your organization as embodied with the site, are an authority on. You know, and for us, that's copywriting, content marketing, landing pages, email marketing, SEO copy, you know, all these topics. Yeah. And we rank really well for all of them. So in my mind, you know, we are an authority site for sure. We didn't start using the term content marketing until late 2008. And we did it even against our will because I really don't like it. It's just so vague. And I'm not even sure some people really understand what it means. Yeah. But when I started in 2006, I was talking about content marketing. I just didn't call it that because we didn't have an agreed term. And then this consensus built around this term. And we said, okay, that's the term. Then it really took off. So from that standpoint, we and Content Marketing Institute are the two oldest and largest content marketing sites out there. Mm-hmm. So from that standpoint, I just have to say that I did not invent the term content marketing and would not have.
So, and I think I've read somewhere, I can't remember, there's been a lot of reference links I've been looking at recently, but you refer to the term media marketing. Do you not? Or you refer to like the idea of content being more media centric, right? And multiple platforms. And
well, exactly. Thing. Because, and I, this is a new way of trying to explain this kind of poor catch-all term for content marketing. What you're really doing is operating as a source of information. Yeah. And the more that information is engaging and useful outside of the pitch, then the more like media it is, right? You know, we have shows and then we have commercials. Well, in this case, your show operates in the same way that marketing or commercials are supposed to do, except you're really leading with the value like a show would. I always point people to like niche basic cable. You know, you got these fantastic educational shows, whether it be Discovery or Home and Garden Network or whatever. And then of course you still have the commercials, but what we're doing here is more like we're the show, but we're also the person that ultimately you want to do business with. And it turns out that that is way more effective than if you were running advertisements against someone's show.
Yeah. Now, who did you model as your business has evolved, and who would you model now? Who do you admire based on what they're doing as it relates to building authority in whatever niche it happens to be? Is there anyone, sites or individuals that come to mind?
Well, you know, when I quit practicing law, I was a liberal arts major with a law degree, never taken a marketing course, never taken a business course, had no idea. And that was the best thing that ever happened to me because I had no preconceptions. I had no idea when I came to the internet about what you're supposed to do. So after getting started publishing and actually building audiences, I could always create stuff that people wanted. I just didn't have a clue about how that was supposed to turn into money. Mm. And in 1999, I read a book called Permission Marketing by Seth Godin. Yep. And I tell people, I don't care how old it is, it's still relevant. Go read it.
Game changer. You know,
it is. And absolutely. So basically, Seth was an old school, you know, direct marketing guy. Yeah. He understood this stuff, you know, from a very hard-nosed standpoint. And he's like, look, the internet is not an advertising medium necessarily. It's a direct marketing medium. That means you have to talk to people directly, but you can't do it like we do it with direct mail, mm-hmm. you know, in offline direct marketing. You don't buy a list, a mailing list is what he's referring to.
Yeah.
You build an audience and you get them to opt in and give you permission. And I was like, oh, that's what we're doing. So at that point, I go back and study copywriting and direct marketing to like 1920. I just went completely over the top, which is my personality. I wanted to learn everything. And coming out of that, I got internet marketing right. While I think some people went down a lot of – I mean the whole 15-year or so history of the banner ad – what a disaster that's been, because that is the wrong way to do it online. But it took a long time because they were taking an offline concept like a billboard and slapping it on pages and thinking that was what would work. It was the wrong metaphor, if you will. Now we're switching to native advertising, right? Because it's more like content, so we won't automatically tune it out.
Yeah, and these publishers are constantly finding or trying to find new ways in order to get in front of these audiences and actually build value and relationships with the end user. I think that's the name of the game, and I'm glad you brought up permission marketing and Seth Godin too, because I know that was a major shift for me too when I finally read that book and thinking like, oh, wow, I get to build relationships with these people instead of just stuffing things down their throats and trying to pitch and sell constantly in the traditional
sense. And it sounds
sense.
Like, yeah, it sounds like a touchy-feely concept, but it's not. It's incredibly powerful. I mean, we built, you know, a multi-million dollar software company out of a blog. There's no venture capital, no, you know. I mean, so it's powerful stuff.
Thanks so much for sharing your time with us here today. Now, please tell me, I'm dying to know, did you enjoy the podcast? Did you get clarity on your biggest challenge, obstacle, or problem that you're currently facing in your own WordPress authority business? If so, then don't miss out on the chance to win a coaching review this week. Just head over to iTunes, subscribe, leave a comment, and then head back to wpauthorities.com/coaching to tell us your pain in the ass, and we'll make sure that we play doctor for you. And stay tuned for our next show in this series, due in your inbox each and every day. Make sure to subscribe via iTunes or head over to our website, wpauthorities.com, and subscribe via email. Until tomorrow.
You will respect my authority.